this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. Michael Walton with his first appearance on the Chicago Bullseye. Michael, thanks for coming on.
No problem at all, Fred. I'm excited to be on, and I've been a firsthand witness of the Matt Peck versus C. Red Fred rivalry, so I've been on Locked On Bulls, so I'm happy to be able to be on the other side of the battle, so to speak, now.
Well, I hope I got your vote in that epic battle.
Well, you know, Fred, it's funny. I kind of it was tough for me between both of you guys because I love both of you guys so much and what you do. I actually had to be impartial, though. I wasn't allowed to vote because of my position within the framework there. So I was rooting for both of you guys.
Very diplomatic of you. Very diplomatic. Very impressive.
Always.
I'm looking forward to it for you running for mayor one day of the city. You got my vote. Hey, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on. And, you know, I really enjoyed talking to you at that event. And I've been, you know, itching to have you come on. I know I heard you on, I think you were on with Matt on his show. And then also, I think you were on Bulls Talk. I think I heard you there. And I'm like, it'd be a great addition to the Chicago Bullseye to come on a few times throughout the year. So I'm hoping this is your first of many appearances. And let's get into the beloved. Before we get into the Bulls, little 411 on you. Where are you from originally, and how long have you been a Bulls fan? What's your favorite player? That little 411 on Michael Walton.
Oh, yeah. So I am a Chicago native, born and raised on the south side of Chicago. So I actually did go to Walter Payton College Prep for high school, and I was obviously a high school a little bit further north there, so definitely have seen sort of all sides of the city, so to speak. So love Chicago with literally all of my heart. Been a Bulls fan my entire life, all 25 years on this earth. So love Bulls, all-time favorite player, Scottie Pippen. And, you know, for me, it's not a cop-out or trying to even be hip with the answer there. It's just a matter of Michael Jordan's the sort of obvious goat here, the greatest player of all time. But for me, you know, I was born in 1994, so obviously I didn't get to see the season with Scottie Pippen there. That two-season gap where you have Jordan not being a part of the team. But when you go back and you look at tape and you hear people talk about Scottie those seasons and you look at the numbers, he really had MVP-level seasons, and the Bulls probably should have made the finals at least one of those years. So Scottie Pippen always my favorite Bull of all time.
No doubt. I hope you had a chance to listen to my interview with David Kaplan about the trade of Scottie Pippen for Sean Kemp. Did you get a chance to listen to that? I got to send you that one.
Oh, man, I actually didn't think that. You got to send me a link of that because I actually do know about that trade. It's always one of those famous what ifs, Sean Kemp on the Bulls with Jordan, and who knows how that would have worked out, but I definitely want to listen to that. So send me a link at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting to debate that because that trade would have included Jalen. The Bulls would have taken Jalen Rose with the earlier draft pick. And, you know, a team of Jalen Rose, Tony Kukoc, Michael Jordan, and Sean Kemp. In my estimation, still would have won titles, probably not three, but what a great what if to maybe talk
and
about
funny,
later in the summer.
On a quick sidebar there, I love that you mentioned Jalen Rose because Jalen Rose growing up actually also one of my favorite Chicago Bulls, a little bit of a deeper cut.
I loved him too. He actually when the Bulls got him, I think it was 03 or 02, I can't remember off the top of my head. But he immediately made the team.
I think it was 02, yeah.
Made the team significantly better. It was 02, you're right. And that you know, I was just really disillusioned with the next year. I mean, I know they drafted Heinrich, and then they went back down to the 20s for wins. But we had a nice little run there when Rose did arrive in Chicago.
Rose was actually one of the few players I was able to get an autographed picture. It was part of a school field trip when I was in grade school. Arthur Dixon Elementary, I believe it was downtown. I want to say at a Macy's or a Carson Perry Scott. It was so long ago. But as a young kid, just Jalen Rose, you know, I didn't know much about wins or losses or analytics, anything like that. All I'm looking at is Jalen Rose getting 20 points a game, and he was getting buckets back then, man. So I loved me some Jalen Rose, still to this day.
I loved him, and I do remember him, too, as a formidable opposition on the Indiana Pacers in 98, which was the team that I feared the most that really had the Bulls potentially could have ended that run, but luckily we came through in Game 7. But enough of reminiscing about the beloved. Let's talk about the team at hand. And I don't know if you're where you're at on the excitement of this offseason, but you know, I'm on a level of 1 to 10. I'm about at a 17. What say you about the draft pick and the free agency, the moves in free agency?
Yeah, so overall, I was a really big fan of pretty much every single thing the Bulls have done this offseason. I really can't find too much to complain about. I mean, at the end of the day, of course, everyone would always want a flashier name, and I would have loved the Bulls could have gotten involved in some of these superstar trades that happened and just sort of acted as a third team to get a couple first-round draft picks. You know, collecting future assets is always very important in my eyes. But overall, Fred, I'm not going to lie. I was very impressed with the way the Bulls front office handled this offseason. Thought it was very businesslike. We've heard the line for years that, you know, they want to work towards competing. And I think with every move they made this offseason, even the draft included, I think you can honestly say they made moves that are going to make the Bulls a better team. I think I'm a big betting guy. If you look at Vegas win totals and lines here, you're seeing it reflecting that people think, without a doubt, the Bulls will be a better team in terms of strictly wins and losses next year. But I think me and you are on the same page, most likely, in agreeing that they will be better in wins and losses, but also, in general, on-the-court chemistry and the way they play as well. I actually have a lot of high hopes for the season, Fred. I'm very excited. I know we'll probably get to win specifics and things maybe a little later there, but I'm very high on next year's Bulls team, just as compared to last year especially.
And I don't know if you feel this way. I'd love to get your opinion on this. Like, I've been really disappointed with the general tenor of the fan base over the last, you know, 5 years, I'd say. I'd even go that far back. You know, people are acting like this has been a complete disaster, and which I disagree with completely. I enjoyed 2016-17 and the three alphas and having a team that was, you know, actually competitive in the playoffs and actually with a 2-0 lead on the number one seed. I enjoyed that season. And then, you know, we go for a rebuild, and right away people are acting like this is the worst it's ever been in Chicago, which is absolute utter nonsense. And, you know, we've had, obviously the last two seasons have been extremely difficult, but this isn't even close to as bad as it was under Floyd or during that era. So, you know, I do feel that after the draft and after free agency, I sensed a little bit of a change in the tenor of the fan base to a more positive direction. Do you see that too, or do you still feel that the majority of the fans are mouth breathers who are complaining that we don't have, you know, Kawhi Leonard?
Well, I can tell with the mouth breathers comment there, Fred, that a little bit of Matt Peck is definitely rubbing off on you there. You guys are spending too much time together there.
Oh, he says that too? I didn't even know. Are you kidding?
I feel like I've definitely heard him use that exact phrase there. But I would say overall, you do see Bulls fans on the more positive side of things. And to be honest, I really don't think it has to do with, you know, any signings or trades or anything like that. I think for Bulls fans, it's just the idea of stability. The fact that, you know, it seems like the Bulls, we've seen this before, but Jim Boylan is the head coach and will be for the foreseeable future. He has a great staff around him now that will be the staff for the foreseeable future. You know, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, these players all look like they have a great relationship. You know, they all seem like they get along. The team is coming together. We sort of built naturally through the draft here. Obviously, as you mentioned, the Jimmy Butler trade obviously kickstarted this whole thing. But I think overall, Bulls fans are starting to become a little bit more satisfied because they feel like a normal NBA franchise. And I know that's a low bar, but that's sort of where we were trying to get back to after the way the Fred Hoiberg fiasco sort of looked to the general public. The Bulls nationally became a laughingstock when the reality is, you know, there were no stories about the Bulls if they were doing, you know, well in little stretches when they were having these poor seasons. But when the Boylan, you know, hiring happened there and Hoiberg got fired, it became such a national story that the Bulls became synonymous with, you know, being a joke, a laughingstock. But I think John Paxson and company have done an excellent job this offseason, sort of, like I said, working towards being an actual team that could be, you know, it's too early to say playoff contention, you know, like absolutely, because we still have to see preseason and, you know, get some more sort of informed notions of what Coby White looks like and if Gaffer can actually be a contributor on day one. But overall, you know, it's not inconceivable for people to wrap them, you know, their minds around the idea of the Bulls being an 8 seed next year. So just the fact that you can say, I think the Bulls can be an 8 seed next year and people won't laugh at you, that is a huge step in the right direction. So I think Bulls fans will start to come around, and I think it's just because, again, you know who your guys are. Your star players are Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen, and I think the fans are ready to ride or die with those guys, and they genuinely like those players. So I think they're in a really good spot right now where really you can only go up from here, I would say.
Yeah, and I didn't even counter it started at the trade deadline with that Otto Porter deal. You know, and I know a lot of fans are really upset. First of all, take a step back. It makes no sense to complain about not getting Kawhi Leonard or another premier free agent in July. If you were going to complain about that, you should have complained when we made the trade for Otto Porter Jr., and a lot of people did. But hearing it over again, it just made absolutely no sense to me because it shows a complete lack of understanding of the cap and what the Bulls did. You know, so we had two choices. We could have been the Knicks and freed up a bunch of cap space and gone for it, or we brought in a player like Otto Porter Jr., who, to me, if he was like a free agent signing, let's just throw his name out there, it would have been one of the better free agent signings. But we acquired a player in his prime, you know, probably for being paid a little bit more than he should be. But to me, it's not just an insane contract at all based on what some of the players got this offseason. So he clearly made the team significantly better, and he's going to continue to do so. And he's just a perfect addition to this team. So,
And for a player who can legitimately defend multiple positions and be a knockdown three-point shooter, I mean, the classic staple 3-and-D, you know, archetype there. Otto Porter, you know, people look at his contract, as you said there, Fred, is he's a little bit overpaid. But as you said, again, with the way the market is now, Otto Porter could be due for another big payday soon. So I don't think, you know, his contract is that crazy. And especially when you look at him again, he's the quintessential glue guy. As soon as he joins the Bulls, you know, they ripped off their best stretch there in the season, it felt like, and the offense was really flowing. The ball was moving. Lauri Markkanen was getting a little bit more space to attack. We really saw Zach LaVine start to play like an all-star after the Otto Porter acquisition. Because, again, he just had more floor spacing to work with, and it was easier for him to sort of find those crevices to drive to the rim there. But I just wanted to make a note there. When you said a lot of fans were complaining, you know, when the Bulls traded for Otto Porter, that was, you know, obviously true. It just seems like it was sort of a lateral move to the average fan who doesn't really see the impact that Otto can have on both sides of the floor there. But the reason I also like the move is I believe Porter next year should be a player option that's going to be for him. And I'm thinking he'll likely decline a player option just because, again, as I said, if Otto has another great season, obviously he's not going to play like he did during his Bull stretch where he shot 48% from the three-point line. You know, he was on fire as a Chicago Bull. That's not going to be a sustainable thing. But if he just plays like the solid player that everyone knows he is, you know, the Bulls are the type of team where he can score 15, 16 points a game easy and really show his versatility, I think we could see Otto opt out and look for a big deal, probably still staying with the Bulls if he likes the situation here. But my biggest point here is I like the acquisition because the Bulls are actually working with the timeline now. Obviously, we've heard every 3 to 4 years about the new plan of free agents we can go after. But Anthony Davis, you know, it's just words, of course. Superstars do this all the time. But this summer, he's been talking a lot about how Chicago's the mecca of basketball, how much he loves the city. And, you know, he even said, of course, that he wouldn't rule out playing for the Bulls one day, which people say things like that all the time. So I don't really put too much stock into that. But the bigger point is the Bulls have put themselves into a situation where, hey, if Anthony Davis is to say he wants to come to Chicago, whether it's in 2020 or 2021, I think we're in a position to legitimately get that done. So I'm pleased with where they are right now just because, again, I don't think something like that would happen. But I think the Bulls are in a spot where you can pivot in multiple directions or you can just stand pat with the team you got it and build that way. So I like all of the options the Bulls have on the table right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do kind of feel you just brought up a really good topic because I think Otto's player option, he could opt out, I think, next summer. And I do kind of feel that situation would be a worst-case scenario just because that it's going to cause you to make a difficult decision a little bit earlier than you probably wanted to. You can either choose to extend him at a very high cost because he's a very good player, or, you know, I'd almost like it better that his number would be coming off the books in the summer of 2021 where there's a lot better crop of free agents, including Giannis, who I predict will not be happy by that summer. And hopefully Chicago will be a legitimate choice. We'll have to wait and see. But what say you? Do you agree with me on that, or do you feel like you'd probably be better off if Otto does opt out this next coming summer?
Honestly, I think it's better off for me. Again, I'm in the mindset of standing pat with this team just because I like the way the Bulls have set up this roster. So I would probably like Otto to opt into that last year just to, again, get one more year of looking at this squad because again, I think next year is going to, or excuse me, I think this upcoming season is going to go pretty well. So I'd probably be down to see another year of Otto in a Bulls uniform and see what that would look like. But again, if a major free agent such as an Anthony Davis or Paul George or someone of that caliber was to generate interest with the Bulls, you know, of course you would have to sort of get that done by any means necessary there. But I would like Otto Porter to stay on this team just because something about the Otto Porter, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr. front court, those three together I really, really like. And I like to see them together for a decent amount of time there. Just because I think the biggest reason I like those three together as a front court is because I think of them as high IQ players, like more mm-hmm. than above average high IQ players. Obviously, Otto the most being a six-year veteran. But Wendell Carter, wise beyond his years, and that's actually a big long-form piece I'm working on for Bulls Confidential right now, digging into Wendell Carter's season and sort of seeing where he can go from here. Because I think Wendell Carter's probably going to be the key to the Bulls being the playoff team. I think you know what you're getting out of Lauri Markkanen to a large extent. You know what you're getting out of Zach LaVine and Otto Porter. But with Wendell Carter, defensively, I think he's already pretty good. But offensively, as we've been saying recently, he has a long way to go. And if he gets more aggressive next year, he can really change the way the Bulls look as a team. So I'm excited about that front court, and I'd like them to stay together for a little bit here.
I agree 100% about Wendell. I think he's got first-team all-defensive ability. I think he could become the most dominant center defensively next to Embiid in the East. I think he's got that much talent. You know, so we'll wait and see where he develops to. Obviously, probably won't get that this year. But sky's the limit for him. I love the kid. And I've been arguing for a while here. I think the Bulls already have the potential. They have a core that can be a title contender in Markin and LaVine and Wendell Carter Jr. And most people look at me like I'm nuts, but I really believe that. I do feel like these players can evolve into something special. You know, nobody believed the Warriors were going to evolve into a title team in 2012 when, you know, they won 23 games and they had Steph and Clay on that team, right? And a couple years later to winning a title, it's, you know, young players get better quick and if they have the talent. So we'll see what happens there. I did want to touch on this really quick before we get into the Eastern Conference and in the All-Stars is, you know, I'm kind of laughing a little bit about the Bulls. All of a sudden now there's concern about the Bulls' wing depth. Oh, my God, we don't have any wings. And I'd first say, well, nobody does. I mean, the 3-and-D players in the league, I love the argument, well, Otto Porter Jr. is just a 3-and-D guy. Yeah, you can count on probably two hands the amount of really good 3-and-D guys there are in the league. That's why, you know, it's a ridiculous statement. There's not many guys that can play great defense and hit the three like Otto Porter Jr. So it's easier said than done to find a player like that. I feel the Bulls have plenty of wing depth because they have point guards and shooting guards with enough defensive versatility that can cover any really decent three in the league. And I'm talking about Chris Dunn. I mean, I'm talking about Shaq Harrison, who it's unbelievable how versatile he is for such a small player. That's all you need is defensive versatility. And you got plenty of wings when you also count Valentine and Chandler Hutchinson. What say you?
So for me, I am a little bit more towards the masses on this one, but I'm not at a point to where I'm freaking out or thinking about any trades or anything. I do know, I believe we have one two-way contract spot left. I remember seeing, I think, Ethan Happ from Wisconsin was sort of rumored for that, but either way, I definitely try to add one more wing just for depth there, but I'm not overly concerned because I think with, you sort of said it best there, Fred, and the fact that, you know, if you have one good 3-and-D wing, you know, you're almost in a great situation because of how scarce the market is there. So you're worrying about guarding the best guys, which thankfully being in the East, you know, the Bulls don't have to see Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, LeBron James every single night. So that's your first thing where you're in a good spot there. But I think you're more worried about just matching up with those best wing size creator type players. Obviously Giannis in that mold as well. And so like you said there, Fred, the Bulls have different options they can throw at those type of players. So I really also like Shaq Harrison to try to, you know, guard up a position and try to take on bigger wings. Chandler Hutchinson, I think, you know, he's underrated almost as a defender. Amen. Obviously, that's kind of impossible for a second-year player, but just in the fact that I think the general consensus is very low on Chandler Hutchinson, and, you know, just give him some time. Summer League, you never judge too much off of that at all. But defensively, Chandler Hutchinson has some chops and the size and the ability. So between Shaq Harris and Chandler Hutchinson, Satoransky, who's 6'7", you know, he doesn't have, you know, the exact same size where he's really going to be able to, you know, bang with the big wing, and neither does Hutchinson really. But the bigger point there is the Bulls have a lot of 6'7", 6'8" size guys where they can at least go guard a wing. And Thaddeus Young would be in that group as well. So obviously Thaddeus Young won't be playing small forward. You probably won't see a ton of Satoransky playing the small forward position, but they can guard those guys in stretches. So I think you're going to be worrying about hiding the weakest man on the floor on someone. And in that scenario, you're probably talking about hiding Zach LaVine, hiding Kobe White, hiding, you know, Archie Diakono on someone. So that won't be that big of an issue. I think Boylan is a defense-first coach who, you know, again, he doesn't get enough credit as well just because of how the general consensus thinks of him. And with those new assistant coaches in place, I think we're going to see the Bulls get a lot more creative with their lineups and with the way they match up. We might see a lot more switching on defense instead of just straight-up drop-back defense on the pick and roll. But overall, you know, I'm okay. If I was concerned on a level of, you know, scale of 1 to 10 about the wing situation, I would maybe put it at a 7 for me right now, because I'm decently concerned that Otto Porter is going to have to play a ton of minutes, which he can, and we know he's capable. But it'll put a lot of stress on Otto if Chandler Hutchinson doesn't take a big step forward this year and if Denzel Valentine isn't ready. But overall, I think they'll be able to patch together a situation, just because I do trust Wendell Carter, Daniel Gafford, and Luke Kornet to be active shot blockers coming from the weak side there. So I think our centers will really be active on defense and have to make up a lot of the slack for how weak the wing rotation may be. So I'm a little bit concerned, but ultimately I think we'll be able to patch up an okay defense. Maybe not league average, but hopefully if you can get somewhere near the league average, then that's when we can talk about the playoffs there.
Yeah, well, I agree with you 100% on Hutchinson's defensively. And to me, any concerns there should be on the defensive end, right? Like, we've got plenty of scoring. We shouldn't be worried about wings on the offensive end. It's the defensive end where the concern should be. But if Valentine's healthy, I know he's not, you know, an elite defender, but he's got length, and that covers up for a lot of mistakes. I think we're fine with Hutch, who I think is going to be an A-plus defender, evolve into that, and Valentine are fine behind Otto Porter Jr. And then, as I said before, like, everybody's talking about getting Holiday. We got to get Holiday, and I feel a lot better about Chris Dunn guarding any three in the league at 6'4", 204, than I do about Justin Holiday at 6'7", 180, guarding any three. So I think Dunn is one of the most underrated versatile defenders, wing defenders, in the league, and especially in Chicago, because people are acting like the guy's trash. We should just cut him for nothing, which is insane to me. So,
It definitely is. I agree with you that, you know, I would actually like to see a lot of Dunn on the wing if the Bulls are going to keep him for a little bit here and see what he looks like.
Absolutely.
In that sort of role where on offense he's just maybe catching the ball on fast breaks and running towards the rim and guarding threes, because Mark Strotman at NBC Sports Chicago wrote a great story there about Chris Dunn functioning on the Bulls coming off the bench, just because he thinks Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine should sort of always split up their time on the floor, and I agree with that. So, yeah, I would definitely like Chris Dunn guarding wing-type players, and the issue we saw with Chris Dunn throughout his career is he would be a great, great defender, and could even be an all-NBA level defender one day if he could learn how to defend without fouls. He's a little bit too handsy, and he racks up fouls very quickly. If Chris Dunn could just, you know, really settle down and not foul so much, I think we could see him become a very effective player. But for the time being, you put him in a role where he's guarding a lot of wings, and maybe he shows off a skill that we didn't necessarily know he was proficient at, and guarding up a position or two. And then if you want to talk about moving him, maybe then you can get, you know, a low or a heavily protected first-round pick instead of, you know, some of the rumors we've heard of people wanting Chris Dunn to be traded for a second-round pick, which, as you said there, Fred, like, that would sort of be a travesty just because of his value at one point and sort of where we've gotten to now. Obviously, I would understand it wouldn't hurt the Bulls that much because you feel like you probably have your infrastructure in place without him. But I would like to see him succeed in some sort of off-the-bench role this year. And then if you want to move him, maybe then he can go to a good situation where both sides can sort of make out well in the trade there.
Yeah, Michael, I counter too, like, let's say we're playing Kyrie Irving. Let's say we're playing Kemba Walker. Let's say we're playing Trae Young. You know, let's say we're playing Bradley Beal. Who do you, who, and those guys are going off. Who do you want to see guarding those players on the perimeter? Like, who is our number one guy to end the nonsense, to bring as a perimeter defender? I say it's Chris Dunn. You know, like, I think there's value in that.
Yeah, and I think I would probably go, you know, Shaq Harrison if I absolutely am going with my first pick guy to get a stop. But a good point to make there is, even though I would go with Shaq Harrison, if Chris Dunn's going to be a part of this team next year, conceivably, he's going to have a bigger role and should have a bigger role and be playing more minutes than Shaq Harrison. So I'd be perfectly fine with Dunn being in that position. I believe he has the bigger wingspan of the two. So Dunn really, really, I think, could show a lot with what you suggested here, which is him guarding up a position often. And the other thing about Dunn here is, you know, he gave up on the three-point shot, the three-point experiment, and I think that's one of the main causes of Bulls fans sort of being done with Chris Dunn and thinking there's nothing he can contribute. But I think that's also silly because, you know, you can look further down the Bulls bench at a player like Shaq Harrison to see, obviously you don't need a three-point shot to still have an impact on offense. You're not going to be a world beater, but if you make smart cuts, make smart passes. And I also believe Chris Dunn has a low-key post game that didn't really get utilized enough in Chicago so far. So I would like to see Chris Dunn sort of getting mismatch on the smaller guards and getting post-ups more even, because he has really a really, really tough time getting to the free throw line. So I think maybe some post-up looks could help him get more contact and get to the charity strike. But overall, we're on the same page here. Chris Dunn has a lot of useful skills. And even at his age, which people like to think of, it's like he's an advanced age, like 10-year veteran for some reason. He's still a very young guy.
Yes.
So Chris Dunn has a lot of growth left, and I think he can really serve a great purpose on a team like the Bulls that, as we both agreed on, offense shouldn't be too much of a problem with his personnel. It's just going to be every night, can they defend enough so they're not losing games 119-109? You know, they just need to be able to get some stops. So when you get to that fourth quarter, you can really have Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen carry you to the finish line. And I think Chris Dunn can be a big part